Yes, and your life counts, and enthusiasm definitely makes a difference. Hello and welcome. You're live on the Sudden Eye Impact Show with your host, Lee, coming to you from the DFW Metroplex. On the Sudden Eye Impact Show, we have fun together, we learn together, and we encourage one another. On the show, we discuss a variety of topics such as, but not limited to, personal responsibility, accountability, mentorship, the power of belief, the power of thought, the power of expectation, the power of words, consciousness, awareness, becoming the observer, accountability partners, being of service, great creativity, innovation, visionary leadership, entrepreneurship, goal setting, goal attainment, imagination, visualization, economic empowerment, relationships, the power of partnerships, belief systems, decision making, the mind, success, self, and focus. On our show, we share concepts, principles, processes, and systems that work when you work them, that deliver good and great results. Our show's mission, purpose, and intention is to discuss and deliver simple, basic, fundamental ways to help everyday people experience more fulfillment, satisfaction, enrichment, enjoyment, health, mental health awareness, and overall peace through utilizing your own latent resources that lie dormant within you. The Sudden Eye Impact Show is spiritual, inspirational, and motivational, expressing electrifying, powerful, and transformative content that anyone can take, learn, and apply in any area of their life to either change their life for the better or to change their life for the best. Today, we have a special guest, and we're in for a treat. We have Mr. Derek Loudermilk. He's a former extreme microbiologist that holds a bachelor's of science degree and a master's of science degree, turned professional adventurer. He's a best-selling author of multiple books, keynote speaker, digital nomad, business coach, and founder of Adventure Quest Travel, and the host of the Art of Adventure podcast. With no further ado, we bring to the stage Derek Loudermilk.
Hey, Lee. Hello. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks for your enthusiasm. I love all of the things you shared that your show is about. It's phenomenal.
Wow. So we're going to kind of have let you tell a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go into some of the questions, and we just kind of go with the flow. There's no restrictions, and I mean, like I say, we just learn together and encourage one another.
Yeah, thanks. I would say I'm an explorer of a lot of different ways. Lately, I've been an explorer of consciousness and spirituality. I've been an explorer of the world. I've been to all the U.S. states and 40 or so countries. And, you know, I was a scientific explorer as well. When you say extreme microbiology, what that means is I was looking for the beginnings of life in the hot springs in Yellowstone National Park. So that's where I discovered a new virus. A new species of virus that is part of an ecosystem that's in the boiling acid hot spring. And so, you know, these are maybe on their surface a bunch of different things that I've done in my life, but really I'm an explorer at heart. And so I'm constantly searching for interesting ideas for my own life and to bring to the world and share with people.
Totally awesome. So I'm going to ask the first question. What are some of your favorite spiritual experiences, the magic tree and the secret rainy season ceremony in Bali?
Yeah. So let me talk about this rainy season ceremony, because this was when I first realized how we can impact the material world with our thoughts. And you know, you may have heard people say thoughts are things or something like that. But I didn't really understand just how much of sort of physical reality could be impacted by, you know, like, you know, if you're thinking stressed out thoughts, it affects your cortisol, or positive thoughts, you know, you have dopamine. So that was fairly obvious. But this was actually in the middle of a world record attempt. We were trying to climb the three highest volcanoes in Bali back to back to back, and we had to start at midnight to basically finish before nightfall the next day. And we got to the bottom of the volcano where the trailhead was. It was behind a temple. And there was nobody around. It was midnight. So we all, you know, synchronized our watches. Okay, we're ready. We're going to, like, sprint up this volcano for the next 4 or 5 hours. And we walked around behind the temple, this Balinese Hindu temple, where the trail was supposed to start. And all of a sudden, there was 10,000 people there. And I had no idea where these people came from. Our local guide didn't even know that anything was going to be going on. But what we discovered was that this was part of a secret ceremony that the Balinese sort of priests and worshipers meant to sort of call in rainy season, to begin the rainy season on the island. And, you know, I had heard sort of that traditional peoples around the world, like, did rain dances and things like that, and they, like, prayed to weather gods and things like that, but I never actually saw anything like that. And you know, these it was crazy because there was little kids there, and there was grandmothers there, and there was men carrying pigs up the volcano to, like, sacrifice into the volcano. And it was just, you know, this whole group of people, they're all dressed in white. And then you're looking up the mountain, there's just this long, thin line of people with headlamps going up the mountain. And my first thought was, you know, this is just going to destroy our world record attempt. There's no way we can go around these people. So we just had to fall in line and sort of parade our way up the mountain in the middle of this secret ceremony. And so we ended up, they sort of stopped at one of the lower calderas, one of these lower volcano points, and we continued on to the top because we had to make it to the top of each volcano. And so we were behind schedule by 2 hours. We were off record pace by 2 hours at that point, and we were like, well, let's just enjoy it, let's just continue on. We ended up setting the world record by several hours because we started off slowly, we were much more fresh after 15 hours, and we were able to sort of race up the final volcano and really sort of break the record because we were fresh. So it actually worked out for our benefit. But so they did this, you know, these worshipers, they were intending for rainy season to start. They, you know, there's thousands of them. They did this elaborate ceremony. And when the sun rose, it was a bright, clear day. And then within a few hours, the rain came in, and it rained for 4 months. And it was just so, like, cause and effect. It was like they intend for this to happen, and boom, just a few hours later, the clouds appeared and it starts raining. And I was like, if you were skeptical, you would say, well, that's just a coincidence, right? They just happened to pick a rainy day to do their ceremony. But when you look at the science of how our thoughts shape the material world and change the probability of events happening, it becomes so apparent that these people, like, flipped a switch and turned on the rainy season. And it just sort of blew my mind that people collectively thinking together and intending for something together could have such a dramatic result. And it just sort of opened my eyes to what's possible.
Wow. Sounds phenomenal. I mean, I can imagine being there right there and it being surreal. Wow. Okay, I'm going to move forward to the next question. How do leaders develop their identity through transformational experiences?
Yeah, this is a project I'm working on. I'm working on a book. And, you know, I've seen people that go and travel the world and they come back as somebody different. And there's, when I think about adventure, you know, I call myself a professional adventurer, and I've got a lot of friends who are professional adventurers, and I see that when they go on a real adventure, you know, there's some element of risk. There's some element of either it's a real physical danger or it's just a perceived risk. Like, you know, me going and singing karaoke for the first time felt like a big risk, even though I wasn't really in physical danger. So there's some element of risk. There's some element of story. There's some story about it. that you can relate. So when you look up adventure in the dictionary, it says adventure is an interesting or remarkable experience. And remarkable means you remark about it. You have a story to tell. But the third element, which I find interesting, is that an adventure changes who you are. Adventure, you come out slightly different. It shifts your perspective of who you are, your identity. And so I started looking at, you know, people go on these adventures, or people go even to festivals like Burning Man or a music festival, or, you know, a lot of people are learning about ayahuasca and psilocybin, and it totally changes their perspective on life and what's possible. And I see, you know, when somebody's identity shifts at a fundamental level, then everything else shifts along with it. You know, their habits and their thoughts and the things they're doing fall in line with their identity. And so, you know, I see so many things just falling in line with when somebody goes through an experience and they reevaluate their identity, the rest of their life on the outside begins to change as well, because it's all flowing from the identity level.
Nice. Okay. Next question, how to lucid dream and use dream time for guidance in business and creativity?
Well, this is one of my favorites. So the way I got into dreaming is I had never really paid attention to my dreams before I learned I was going to be a dad. So I have a 4-year-old son. So I've, basically this was four years and 9 months ago when I learned I was going to be a dad. And I pretty quickly realized, you know, being a dad means less travel, less adventure to some degree. And so I was kind of, you know, mourning that my life might change and that I might be constrained in some way. Instead of just a free spirit, I might have some responsibility, you know, to take care of my son. And this synchronicity, this, you know, fortuitous thing happened where this woman sort of had a vision that she needed to hire me as her coach. So she found me. She sort of just, you know, pulled my name out of the ether and found me on the internet, called me and said, you know, I need you to be my coach. And she happened to be, she called herself an oracle. So another thing she did was she gave me a session. She gave me an oracle session so I could understand what she did. And she said, it's going to really help you to have adventures once you master your dream time and once you learn to lucid dream. Because when you lucid dream, you become aware that you're dreaming. And so then you can go off on any adventure. You can start to fly around. You can decide to go anywhere in the world, or you can, you know, bring your friends into the dream to have an adventure with you. So it's a way of being adventurous, the way of traveling without actually having to travel, because you get the chance to every night. So I started keeping track of my dreams. I started keeping a dream journal, because that's sort of the first step, is to try to remember your dreams. So you set the intention, I will remember my dreams when I wake up. And then when you wake up, you try to write them down so they don't, you know, fade away. So people that say, I don't have dreams, or I don't remember my dreams, it's just, you know, probably because they fade away right when you wake up and you start thinking about something else. But we all dream every night. Everybody has REM sleep and we all have dreams. So once I started keeping track in my dream journal, I noticed, you know, I've had a few lucid dream experiences, and it's so cool. It's so cool to, you know, make yourself fly through the stars or whatever you want to do. But there's another aspect of dreaming, which is super powerful, which is, you know, dreams have long, people have interpreted dreams, then that's really an access point to our unconscious mind, to our subconscious, which there's so many things going on there that isn't in our conscious or present awareness that can really help us make decisions in life, to know how to move forward, to, you know, just gain creative insights. There's so much power in the subconscious mind that you can access through dream time. And so I teach my entrepreneur clients, my business coaching clients, I teach them how to access their subconscious and dream time. Let's say you want to decide what the next move in your business should be. Well, you can simply ask a question as you prepare to fall asleep for the night. You would just hold in your thoughts, subconscious, I want you to give me a sign or explain to me or show me some guidance around what the best move for me in my business should be. And then you'll get something that's maybe really clear or something that's less clear. And sometimes it depends on, the interpretation. You might get a weird symbol and you have to decide, what does this really mean? And sometimes you have to go back the next night to ask for clarification. But you will always get an answer if you keep asking the question. So it's great practice, and it's really easy to learn. So I would suggest, if anybody listening has a question in their life or wants guidance about something, ask your subconscious as you fall asleep. Spend 5-10 minutes as you're falling asleep and tell your subconscious mind, subconscious, here's what I'd like you to do tonight. I'd like you to bring me information that will help me in my relationship, or that would help me make more money, or that would help me feel at peace, whatever you're looking for. And your subconscious will assist you with that. It's really amazing.
Wow. Next question. What are the secrets to charisma and body language that will make someone more powerful?
Well, funny enough, before we got on this show, I actually thought, I want to make sure that I show up charismatic on this call. So I actually spent 2 minutes dancing around in my office, listening to pump up music. And what I was doing was I was making sure to take up a lot of space with my body. And so, imagine like a superhero standing tall with their arms at their hips, or like a victory pose when someone throws their arm up in the air and they're like, yes, I've done it. This pose, like being a sort of full physical expression of what you can be, actually changes your internal physiology. It reduces stress hormone, cortisol, and it increases testosterone, and it makes you feel more powerful. And actually, if you hold one of these positions called power posing for just a couple minutes, it can shift your internal state, and you feel powerful, you feel confident, you change your internal chemistry. And there's a couple ways to go about this. You can change your internal state. You can become more charismatic with your body. You can also, the mind follows the body and the body follows the mind. There's a sort of a feedback loop. So you can think positive thoughts as well. And it would, maybe change your posture. It would change, if you're crunched over, and especially this is important for people that use their phones a lot, it collapses your posture. And if you look at somebody who's sad, right, they have collapsed posture. And so that's actually making people less charismatic when they're crumpling their body into a ball behind a computer or a phone. And so what you want to do is you want to expand your body. And when you have, when you're taking up space and you have good posture, and when your voice is resonant, and when you can make clear eye contact with people, all these things, these are subtle cues picking up, other people start picking up on your body language. It's these nonverbal cues, and they begin to see, wow, this person is powerful because of the way they're holding themselves. And this is all these when we encounter people, we sort of quickly make a judgment. Are they friend or foe? Are they a nice person? And if we decide they're nice, then we want to know, how powerful is this person? Should I be their friend? And so all these cues sort of are elements of charisma. And the good thing about this is that when you think about charismatic people, you know, Martin Luther King or presidents or whoever it is, and you think, wow, they must have been like that. They just were born charismatic. What's actually happening is they probably just learned at a young age how to be charismatic, how to be funny and gregarious and outgoing and all these things. And anybody can learn these skills. It just takes some awareness of how other people are perceiving you, whether you're, you know, crouched over your phone or you walk through the doorway and you're smiling and you're full of energy and you're laughing. Somebody sees you and they make a first impression and they're like, wow, I like that person. You know, there's some warmth to that person and I see they're confident and charismatic. So one actual interesting trigger that we can share with your audience is using doorways to start to make this a habit. So whenever you walk through a doorway in your house and into a coffee shop, at work before a meeting, whenever you walk through a doorway, make sure you take a second and stand tall, have open body posture, open and warm, smile, and then walk through the doorway. And that's when people will see you in this sort of nice, warm, open, and confident state. And so that's one of the things you can do to start training yourself to be charismatic. And it's just something that anybody can learn.
Nicely stated. The next question, the five elements of abundance. Why focusing on money is keeping you poor.
Yeah, when I say that focusing on money is keeping me poor, what does that mean? That's counterintuitive. And so many people, it is because our society is all, you know, having us focus on money and you've got to earn a paycheck and everything's set up to be based around money. But true abundance is being able to do what you need to do when you need to do it. And so when you look at it that way, money is an obvious tool that can help you do what you need to do when you need to do it. But you can see that there's many other ways to do what you need to do. For example, if somebody just did something for me, if they just said, hey, I'll fix your car for you, right? That's a gift. So somebody could just give me the thing that I need without me having to pay for it. Well, that's encompasses the same thing, but I don't have to have money involved. So there's one element is just gifts. And we can all we can give gifts just as easily as we can give money. So there's another element of it. And then there's an element of trading, right? If you're a coach and I'm a coach, then we can coach each other and we could, you know, hire each other, but we might as well just trade or barter services. So there's the ability to find ways that we can help each other and do some sort of exchange or trade, which ultimately helps us do what we want to do when we want to do it. There's an element of creativity. There's an element of if you knew the right idea, you know, I think on your show, you talk about, you know, modeling after people that we respect. And, you know, if you're talking to a mentor or you're talking to a coach and they can give you insight, like, well, here's how I've done it, or here's what I've seen successful people do, then you can say, wow, I had no idea, but if I just do that, it'll get me way closer to my goal much faster. And that's worth even more than money sometimes. So the access to the right ideas and the access to creative solutions, that's another form of abundance. So when you start stacking all these different layers of abundance together, then maybe, you know, something takes a little bit of money and a little bit of ideas, or maybe it takes a little money and a little trade. You know, there's another piece of it, which is good luck, or, you know, a coincidence happens, but you have to say yes to the opportunity. You have to say, you know, I see how this fits in with my plan, and I'm going to, even though it wasn't what I was expecting, I'm going to say yes. So there's luck, you know, there's saying yes to opportunity. That's another element of true abundance. And so when you see that abundance can be achieved by many different ways and sometimes a blend of different ways, then it, you don't have to spend all your time just focusing on money when money might be the least efficient way to get what you want. And I realized that through relationships, through our community, through friendships, through strategically connecting with people that we're aligned with, that you get access to almost all these areas of abundance. You can find people in relationships that become customers or clients, or you can refer business to you or something like that. You can get ideas from people. You can trade with people. You can get gifts from people. So relationships are actually much more valuable than money. When I was living in Bali, I had some friends that owned businesses, some Westerners that owned businesses, and they hired local people. And the local Balinese, sometimes they just don't show up for work. And it was very frustrating to my friends. They were business owners because, you know, they want to be able to trust their employees are going to show up. But the Balinese knew that relationships were more valuable than money. So they would, if their friend needed help or if they had some community obligation, they would do that instead of going to work, because they knew that their access to abundance was going to be fulfilled much more easily through these relationships than through just focusing on money. And so, you know, this is just a perfect example of, like, the Westerners think that's silly, just get the money and then you can do what you want. And the Balinese were like, no, we know where our true wealth and our true security is. It's in our community and our relationships. So that's the way I've been thinking about abundance lately.
Nicely stated. Can you talk to us a little bit about the book Superconductors?
Sure. Yeah. Superconductors. this is a solo book that I wrote a couple of years ago. And a superconductor is someone who wants to get big things done. They have big dreams and they want to, you know, they want to be efficient. They want to be able to lead teams, and they want to be able to use all their points of leverage to make something happen in the world. So in the book, I look at different skills and qualities that you can acquire to basically get big things done, amplify how you work in the world. So some of those examples would be accelerated learning. If you can learn a new skill or a new language or become familiar with a new technique or something quickly, then you'll be able to apply it. And so you can learn more things in the course of a year, and that, you know, greatly increases your productivity. And so the better you are at learning something, immersing yourself in a, you know, let's say I want to be an expert at coaching. I want to learn how to be a coach. Well, what are the things you need to learn? And designing a plan to really experience and learn all that stuff as fast as possible. So there's an element of accelerated learning. We talk about relationships. We talk about how to connect with the right type of people. So whether it's people that can give you advice or be a mentor or a model, or whether it's people that can give you access to opportunities. Right. If it's like you're a person who, right, you have an audience, so you have this sort of distribution channel. So you might be an ideal person for someone to connect with when you're looking to build relationships. So there's people called super connectors. These can be people like your barber or the local restaurant owner, but they can also be people like event organizers or politicians or somebody that encounters, they're at the hub of a network, and they have access to a lot of people and opportunities. So we talk about learning, we talk about people, we talk about charisma, some of the elements of charisma and personal power. And in the book, you know, there's basically 10 chapters and 10 different skills, 10 different things you can learn to really become a superconductor.
Nice. Tell us about the book Active Life.
Yeah, and you'll get a kick out of this. this project, it's a collaborative book project. We have two volumes and 50 authors in the first one and 30 authors in the second one. And we're putting together a third one right now. And, you know, as a coach, I have a lot of peers that are amazing coaches. Some of them have been my coach. Some of them have taught workshops at my events. And I thought, you know, wow, I would love to get this, all these exercises that, you know, you take people through a process and it changes their life. And if we could get those out to the world and in such a way that people can sort of go through them on their own in the comfort of their own home, that would be amazing. And so I started putting together this book where each chapter is a single exercise. You know, there's steps that you can go through step by step on your own. And there's context, you know, there's like, here's how to do it and things like that. So, and the book has different, you know, there's life coaching and health coaching and business coaching and spiritual coaching. So there's a few different sort of sections to each book. And I also, when I started, I really, you know, just wanted to help my friends become authors, because many people, they have a dream of writing a book or they have a dream of being a published author. And I knew from writing Superconductors, which took me 2 years, that it can be a big challenge. It always takes longer than you think, and a lot of authors get stuck, you know, 80% of the way done, and their book sits in a drawer. And so I said, I'm going to make this easy for my friends. I'm going to make this easy for coaches and healers and spiritual teachers to become authors without having to write a full book. They just write a single chapter. And so it's this great project we've been doing each year for the last 3 years, and seeing the feedback, the reviews on Amazon, and people sending me pictures of their kids going through the exercises or their grandmother going through using the book. It's really cool to see when you create something and then the world takes it and runs with it and uses it. It's very rewarding to see what an impact it has.
Nice.
Talk to me about the LEAP method of quantum entrepreneurship developed by you.
Sure. Yeah, this is, you know, this is my coaching method that I've developed over the last 4 or 5 years. And so we take elements. So the LEAP is an acronym. The L actually stands for the Thought Leaders MBA. And so this is the business side of it. And this is, you know, the people that I work with largely are coaches, speakers, authors, online course creators, people that run retreats. So I call them thought leaders because they have a mission and they want to teach people. They want to train and use their knowledge to help the world. And learning how, you know, 30 years ago, there wasn't really a business model. How to make a career out of this, but there is now, and so I teach people, you know, the marketing and the sales and how to create a course that people really get a lot out of. So there's the business side. That's the L. There's the E, which is the energy experience, which is where I weave in all the spiritual exploration that I've been doing. But it's also energy has to do with quantum physics and how we apply, you know, like I was talking about with these people that turned on rainy season, you know, they're applying what we know through scientific research, through quantum physics, through focused intention, you know, without probably knowing the science behind it. But I'd like to have research-backed, verifiable procedures that people can use to take advantage of spiritual energy and quantum physics and entanglement and all those things to impact their business. Because you really need to be aligned. And if you know the fundamental laws of the universe, then it just makes everything so much easier. You don't have to worry about trying to push against starting a business and it's not flowing. And you know, we've all experienced like getting stuck and losing motivation and all these things. When you understand a lot of these fundamental laws of the universe, that doesn't really happen. Business flows easily and smoothly, which is great. So that's the E, L-E. And then the A is the adventure mindset. And this is really when you think like an adventurer, you build your confidence. You're seeking discomfort. You're seeking growth. You're seeking, you're prioritizing learning and developing and changing your identity more so than you are prioritizing comfort and safety and reliability and all these things. So really teaching people how to think like an adventurer, how to take strategic risks and continue their growth as a person. So that's LEA. And then the P is the peak performance, which comes from my time as a pro athlete. I was a professional cyclist, you know, like the Tour de France. I was racing on the road bikes. And before that, I was a collegiate runner. And so when you're a pro athlete, you're focusing on the little things that are going to give you a 1 second gain here, or a, you know, help you rest just a little percentage better over here. So you're looking at, you know, your diet, and you're looking at, can I get a massage? And you're looking at, how hard should I train today versus the next day? Or, you know, the strategy in the race, you know, how can I better use the energy that I have? And so you're looking at all these little things, because, right, we all know Olympics can be won by fractions of an inch or fractions of a second. And so when you're thinking about your life like a pro athlete would, you're constantly looking for these 1% improvements that over the course of a year are going to lead to 400% improvement, which is phenomenal, right? But it's just a little bit every day. And then, you know, you learn something and you take it and you put it into practice, you integrate it into your life. And that's what the peak performance part is. So this whole method, you know, you need each of these pieces if you want to be, you know, a high impact entrepreneur, what I call a quantum entrepreneur, living in alignment, achieving your full potential, you know, being adventurous, going to the cutting edge, doing something that people that's never been done before, you know, really changing the world. That's what it takes. And then understanding business, how to make it sustainable. If you have a big mission in the world, you need to have income coming in to continue fueling that mission. So that's why you need to understand business. So all these pieces are essential if you really want to become an entrepreneur with a big impact.
Wow, nice breakdown. I want to give you a moment to advertise, and then I have some more questions for you. Tell the audience, you know, how they can find out more about you and your programs and so on and so forth.
Sure. You can find everything at DerekLoudermilk.com. And we've actually recently rebranded. I host a podcast that was formerly called The Art of Adventure. We've rebranded to The Derek Loudermilk Show, just so, you know, that's in alignment with my own name. So you can find me on wherever you find podcasts, The Derek Loudermilk Show. Thanks.
Nice. Derek, I know, like, on every level, there's low lows and then there's high highs. Can you walk us through, you know, some of the defining moments, like maybe when you were a professional athlete and then like your personal life and then like your financial journey? And the
Sure.
reason I'm asking the reason I'm asking this is because a lot of times, like, the audience, like, they don't know us, they can't see us, and they think, like, there's really something great about us or we're different from them. But, you know, at the end of the day, we all have abilities, gifts, and talents in us that we're to develop to be able to make a contribution to the community and to the universe. So I kind of like to ask the guests to walk us through defining moments, tough times, and then when they overcame it. So the audience can see that, you know, we're human just like them.
Yeah. So there's one moment that's coming to mind, which I'll share. And there was about, I guess it was 7 years ago now, was a big turning point in my life, because almost everything. So that in the same year, I lost my house to a flood. I got divorced. I had a traumatic brain injury, and I dropped out of grad school, dropped out of my PhD program. And, you know, all of those things were like expected life trajectories. I expected to be a scientist, a research scientist, a professor. You know, I expected to be married. I expected to be healthy. I expected, you know, not to have a freak flood destroy my house. And, you know, all of a sudden my slate was wiped totally clean. And yes, there was a moment. There was that like terrible moment when I was in, you know, on the other side of the world, and basically everything in my life had gone, and I had food poisoning, and I was alone, and nobody was going to come save me, and I didn't know if I was going to survive. I thought I might just die of poisoning alone in the jungle. And when you know, it took me 3 days of essentially just lying on my floor to like clear these toxins out of my system. And, you know, then I like walked down this dirt road to get, you know, a bowl of rice from the local woman selling rice. And, you know, that was like, so I'm just sitting there by myself eating a bowl of rice, alone in the jungle. And it dawned on me, like I had lost all these things, and I wasn't feeling sad about it. I was feeling hopeful. I was feeling excited. I was feeling full of possibility, because that meant I didn't have to be any of those ways that I had been before. I had the chance to sort of recreate myself. I had the chance to become anything I wanted. It was such a blessing in that moment for me to see, like, wow, I can choose. I can re-choose who I want to be. And from that point on, I started building my life into what it is today and becoming the person, you know, that I am right now on this call.
Wow, totally awesome. Are there any stories that you could share with us from when you were like a professional cyclist?
Yeah, the first time I raced against Lance Armstrong, this was when he was making his comeback, and I don't know if he was doping at the time or not, but either way, he was one of the best cyclists in history in the world up to that point, and it really opened my eyes, because I had been racing around the U.S. for a few years, but I had never raced against somebody of that caliber and that level. And he brought his team with him, and they were all really good. And they rode so fast and so hard, and they didn't get tired. I think we rode 100 miles in less than 3 hours. You know, that's like 33 miles an hour, which is just incredibly fast. On the very first day. And I was like, okay, well, this is my chance. You know, I've never met Lance. I'm just gonna follow him around all day. So in road cycling, most riders just ride as a group. It's called the peloton, because there's drafting involved, so everyone's kind of packed tightly together. And I just followed Lance around just to try to absorb what it was that he was doing. And it wasn't just his fitness that made him so remarkable and you know, win the Tour de France and things. And it wasn't just the doping, but it was the way he moved. There was no energy wasted. It was everything he did had an absolute laser focused purpose. And, you know, just following him around all day, I could see how he wasn't wasting any energy, and he knew exactly what to do and where to be and all these things. So it was just really cool to be exposed to that. And it also, you know, realizing that like I had come so far, I was, you know, more fit than 99% of the world. And yet the gap between myself and Lance was something that I felt like I couldn't even bridge. I could never get that good. Like my genetic gifts just would never let me be that fit. And so what it actually did was, it actually led to my retirement eventually, because I thought, you know, I can really enjoy cycling without having to try to be the best in the world, and knowing that I'm going to have such an uphill battle, I kind of shifted my thinking. I thought, you know, I'm going to set my life up in such a way that I can keep cycling and keep racing and enjoy it, but I think I better have a different career. I think I better try to earn a living a different way. So it was both really cool to experience that and very humbling. to be around such a champion, and ultimately sort of said, like, wow, this is the pinnacle of my career, like being in these big international races. And I felt satisfied at that point that I had sort of done what I set out to do.
Wow. You mentioned earlier that you've been to all the 50 states and then to like 40 countries. Can you give us like a blissful experience that you've had in the state and then in a country outside of the United States?
Yeah. And, so I had a quest. My quest was to go to every state before I turned 30. We did some road trips as a kid. So I got I got all the Midwest states and I got the Southwest states, with my family as a kid. And then I started ticking them off. I would go to the Northeast or I would go to the South or, different areas. And just when you have a quest and you're going to do this by 30, then you can plan your trips and within the framework of the quest. And so, because I've been to all the states, one thing that I really love is any American, I can be like, hey, I've been to your state. I get what it's like there. And you form this sort of connection, commonality with people, which is really fun. All the states are really wonderful, but probably my favorite place in the United States is the Okefenokee Swamp. And this is this sort of natural area on the border of Florida and Georgia. And, a swamp is a very slow-moving place, and it's very interesting ecology, very unique ecosystem. And in the Okefenokee Swamp, there are, if you can imagine being there, it's like kind of dark and misty, and there are, big herons flying around and alligators and, possums hanging from the tree and, bald cypress where the knees are sticking up out of the water. So it's a very magical place. And as the plant matter from the trees starts to decay on the bottom of the bayou, it makes these bubbles, and it sort of lifts up the plant matter. And so what you end up with are these little floating islands. It's like a land, it's like an island, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet or something like that, but it's floating. And so it's really weird. You can canoe, you can paddle up to them in a canoe, and you can get off and you can stand on this island. You could even paddle your own island around in the bayou. And it was just so weird and wonderful and unique. And I was there when I was younger. I was about 14 when I was there. And it was just such a magical experience. Filled me with wonder and awe and appreciation. That's probably my favorite place in the States.
How about another country?
Oh, yeah. Best country in the world that I've been to is Slovenia, which, not to be confused with Slovakia, Slovenia is right next door to Italy. And it's a tiny country, and it's got everything you would ever want, everything that I would ever want. It's got like a Mediterranean Riviera. It's got Alps. And ski resorts. It's got beautiful rivers and valleys and canyons. It's got wine country, like Napa Valley. It's the oldest wine region in the world. They have some grapevines that are like 800 years old, still producing wine. There's beautiful castles, and the capital, which is called Ljubljana, is it's been preserved. It hasn't been destroyed by any of the world wars, so it's very historic. And the people are nice, and it's really cheap to live there. It's just got everything in it. It's just such a wonderful country. And it's just tiny. It takes like 2 hours to drive across, but it's got the whole, everything of Europe condensed into one single little country. And I would say that's probably my favorite country.
Wow. Nicely stated. Man, I really, really appreciate you coming on the show. I was going to say this, my son just turned 4, November 18th. I do feel a deep connection to you. It was interesting in your comments on the invitation request. So I do feel connected with you. You're very authentic. I can see the childlike spirit and energy. I think that it was a great fit for you to come on Sudden Eye Impact Show. So for the audience, I'm going to leave you with a few quotes, and then I'll close. But we want to send sincere appreciation to Derek Loudermilk for coming on the show and sharing great substance with us, things that we all can utilize in the experiences and what he taught today, utilize them as tools to, you know, get unstuck or to move forward. I think a lot of what he said was encouraging, and it's saying, if you're in a certain disposition and you don't like it, you know, he wasn't telling us to beat ourselves up. It's about acknowledging it, identifying it, and then using a lot of the information that he shared with us today to get ourselves unstuck, or if we're in a certain spot, to move a little bit forward. He even gave example of, I mean, don't expect to increase 100% in a day. Look at incremental improvement, maybe 1% a day, or if you, that's too far-fetched for you, maybe 0.5% a day or 0.25%. As long as you're moving forward, everything is energy. That's all there is. You're not waiting on anyone. The world's waiting on you. So I'd like to leave you with a few quotes. Dreams don't become reality through magic. It takes sweat, determination, and hard work. General Colin Powell. If one advances confidently in the direction of his or her dreams and endeavors to live the life which they have imagined, they will meet with success unexpected in common hours. Henry David Thoreau. 2% of people actually think, 3% of people think that they think, and 95% of people would rather die than think. Dr. Ken McFarland. All that we are is the sum total of our thoughts. Buddha. A man is what he thinks about all day long. Ralph Waldo Emerson. So I would say, be the change you want to see. Be an agent of change. Be an ambassador of change. First you will change you, then your world and everything in it will change. Until the next Sudden Eye Impact Show, do the best that you can with what you have. Enjoy the rest of the day.